WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the days before you could show nudity on screen, a legal loophole allowed you to show nude people at nudist camps. Doris Wishman is one of the filmmakers who took advantage of that by making nudist camp films like Diary of a Nudist, Nude on the Moon, Blaze Star Goes Nudist, Behind the Nudist Curtain, and The Prince and the Nature Girl. To justify the nudity, the films extolled the healthy lifestyle of nudist camps.
As you know, I moved to Miami from Kansas City only a few months ago.
I see.
I've been a nudist for many years now. I really believe it has made a better and more tolerant person out of me. Certainly a healthier and happier one.
I know what you mean. I've never felt as healthy and as alive as I do since I've joined this lodge. I wish I could make other people understand how beneficial, both mentally and physically, it is to be a nudist.
Doris Wishman followed up her nudist films with sexploitation films like Bad Girls Go to Hell, Another Day, Another Man, A Taste of Flesh, and Too Much, Too Often. She was perhaps the only woman making independently produced sexploitation films in the 60s and 70s. Now her work is being shown at repertory cinemas and film festivals. My guest Michael Bowen is writing a biography of her and trying to revive her work. We'll meet Doris Wishman a little later. I asked Michael Bowen to describe nudie cuties, or the nudist camp film genre.
Technically, there's a distinction between the nudie cutie and the nudist camp film. Russ Meyer is best known for having invented the nudie cutie in 1959 with a film called The Immoral Mr. Tease, and that's really sort of a celluloid version of a Playboy magazine. And the nudie cutie, I would argue, is largely a West Coast phenomenon due to difference in censorship laws and structures. On the East Coast, however, in the mid-50s, a small-time independent producer named Walter Bebo made a film called Garden of Eden, and it was a melodrama essentially cast in a nudist camp. He was able to produce this film with an expectation of getting it exhibited because high courts had ruled that nudism and nudist magazines, magazines espousing the nudist lifestyle, which was sort of a phenomenon of the time, couldn't be discriminated against, that nudism was a valid social philosophy and therefore was not obscene. So Bebo made this picture, and he took it around the country in small venues and did okay, but when he tried to get into big East Coast cities like New York and Boston, he was shut down almost immediately by the then existing censor boards. He won a number of court battles, and by the late 50s, the film was playing all over the place. Doris had worked for a distribution entity that was involved with the distribution of the film in a small part of the country, as I understand it. And after she got out of distribution, she got it into her head that she would go into production and make a nudist film, which she knew had been financially successful. That's the version of the story she tells. I suppose we could speculate as to why it is that she was attracted to the genre herself personally, but she says she figured that it would do well commercially.
What were you allowed to show? You were allowed to show breasts and buttocks. Was that it?
You were allowed to show breasts, you were allowed to show bottoms. Oftentimes, you probably appreciate that it's difficult to construct a shot in such a way that it covers other private areas effectively. So Doris and other filmmakers would do things like have people walk around with a large hat or a towel or a beach ball or something held down low in front of their genital area so that it wouldn't be exposed. I know also Doris oftentimes, when she showed a volleyball game, would mysteriously have the side that was necessarily facing the camera wear shorts. These were the sort of manipulations that were necessary to produce at the time. I find now that when you see some of these films, and some of them are available on video, it's an element of their charm, because it's very obvious that the producer-director had to go out of their way to orchestrate the situation so that they could show something, but not too much.
So there's no sex in these films?
No, there's no sex at all in these films, and it's probably a crucial a part of their legitimacy. The films are not about sex. And from my own research into this area, and there hasn't been a lot of intelligent scholarly work written on the nudist movement. Certainly there's room to write more, but from the things I've been able to find, that's fairly consistent with the practices of nudists at the time and the nudist philosophy. Exhibition of sexual arousal was considered sort of the cardinal sin of nudism. Within the context of the nudist camp, people were not supposed to become sexually aroused, and they weren't there to be sexually aroused. They were there to sort of get back in touch with their bodies as a natural entity that wasn't, perhaps ironically in some ways, wasn't about sex. In some ways, the movement itself had fairly conservative social values, given the kind of nascent sexual revolution that I would argue was already gaining momentum by that time. Certainly, we're in a kind of like post Playboy magazine phase, and the swinger and the bachelor and the ladies' man are becoming sort of very prevalent cultural figures at this time. So nudism, and in some ways Doris's films along with nudism, was a relatively sexually conservative ideology.
Doris Wishman went from making nudist camp films to making sex exploitation films later in the 60s, and some of the films she made were about rough sex, about rape and whippings, and not very graphic, because there was a limit, I suppose, to what you could show.
That's right.
But why did she change to in this kind of sex exploitation direction?
Well, as Doris has explained it to me, she changed in that direction because everybody did. The nudist camp film had kind of played out by, say, 63, 64. It became clear that producers weren't able to contrive new and interesting plots. The audiences were starting to dwindle. People who were going to see these films had basically seen enough. That seems fairly clear. Doris would tell you, as she's told me, I assume that she just followed the trend and got out of the nudist camp genre, which she was not only a pioneer in, but as far as I know, is probably the most prolific single producer director in that genre. She produced 8 films. She told me one time she would have continued to make them forever if they had stayed popular, because she felt that she could contrive new storylines, but people weren't going to them anymore. So starting around 64, I think, would probably be the best date, a new sort of exploitable picture that began quickly to incorporate a limited amount of nudity, but was really more about sexual situations, began to hit the exploitation circuit, or the grindhouse circuit, as it's sometimes called.
Doris Wishman is a woman making these sex exploitation movies. Do you think you can see that in the point of view of the films?
I would argue that you could. I think that if you look at the films made by these other producer directors that I've mentioned, and then look at Doris's films, you'll see that there are definite differences. Women characters, until very late in Doris's work in this genre, are always central to the films. They're generally women who find themselves in difficult situations. They're seeking economic or sexual autonomy and are generally unable to find it. It's a kind of very grim a commentary on a world before feminism, so to speak, a world in which feminism doesn't sort of sit on the horizon. There's not a lot of hope in Doris's films. While the plots are usually constructed as melodramas, which generally have a happy ending, Doris's films almost always suddenly twist tragically in the very last minute. So while she works with many of the tropes of the genre, she obviously knew what other director-producers around Ninth Avenue in New York, where these films were made, were doing at the time. She really subverts the genre, I would argue, and I think has interesting implications when you think about the fact that she was the only woman working in this genre.
Well, Michael Bowen, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Doris's work.
Michael Bowen is writing a biography of Doris Wishman. His working title is Queen of Sexploitation. We'll meet Wishman after a break. This is Fresh Air.